You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On January 18, 2002, President Ahmadinejad Kaba of Sierra Leone told a jubilant crowd, "War done done," meaning the war is over. He was referring to a decade-long civil war that had claimed tens of thousands of lives. Rebecca Richmond Cohn has borrowed the phrase for the title of her documentary that chronicles the years after the killing stopped and Sierra Leoneans began rebuilding their lives. During that time, the special court for Sierra Leone was reopening wounds with a trial of the rebel leader. The film will be screened at 6:45 tomorrow at the Walter Reed Theater as part of the Human Rights Watch Festival. I'm pleased that War Done Done brings Rebecca Richmond Cohn to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. I'm delighted to be here. Thank
you. So who is Issa Hassan Cisse, the man at the center of this trial?
So Cisse was a young rebel leader. He was forcibly conscripted to join the rebels when he was a teenager and was incredibly loyal to the leader of the RUF and fought his way up through the ranks. And at the end of the war, became the interim leader and disarmed the rebels and ended the war.
Well, what had started this rebellion in the first place?
It depends on who you ask, perhaps. Fody Sonko and Charles Taylor launched the Revolutionary United Front in Sierra Leone in 1991. They claim it was to promote a utopian socialist ideology. The prosecution and those critical of the RUF say this was a way to promote their own power and enrich themselves.
At one point, the prosecutor says that the Civil War was unique, particularly in that it was started for criminal and not political purposes.
Right.
So what were the criminal purposes? Natural resources? Sierra Leone is rich in diamonds, isn't it?
Right. Sierra Leone is rich in diamonds. Most of those were exported, and Sierra Leoneans saw very little of the profit from that. It went to foreign corporations. So it was a means to take back power by Sierra Leoneans. It was a way to fight a corrupt and totalitarian one-party state that had absolutely no space for peaceful dissent. And it was a way to enrich their own lives, I think, whatever your definition of that is.
How many others were indicted along with Cisse?
There were a total of 10 indictments. Three factions who were Sierra Leonean plus Charles Taylor, the former president of Liberia.
And the original founder of the revolutionary movement had been killed by this time, hadn't he?
Right. Fody Sonko died in the custody of the special court, unfortunately.
One prosecutor says that when he first looked at Cisse, it was the first time in his life that he looked into the eyes of a human being and realized that he had no soul.
Right.
What was your reaction when you first saw Cisse in person?
So a little bit about my background. I'm actually trained as a lawyer, and I had worked at the special court on a defense team. So I come from a place where I've met a lot of people who are accused, if not guilty, of very terrible crimes. And I think one of the roles of the defense is to look at a human being and to see them for more than the worst thing that they've ever done. So I don't believe that war crimes like these are perpetrated by people who have no souls. I believe that war crimes are perpetrated by human beings who find themselves in very terrible circumstances and may make very terrible decisions, but those are human decisions. So I saw a soul in Issa Cisse.
But did the rebels have to be so cruel? Throughout the film, we see people who have had their hands or feet amputated.
Right. There's no justification for the crimes. Wanting to be an advocate to defend someone accused of crimes is very different than justifying the crimes. So absolutely not. I mean, there's no reason for the barbarism on the scale committed by the rebels and the other organizations. I think in war, human beings often lose sight of morality, of norms, of law.
They would kidnap children and force them to serve as soldiers or as sex slaves.
Right.
Did the government do similar things? Often in these wars, both sides wind up kidnapping kids and forcing them to fight.
Right. The terrible crimes were perpetrated by all factions, including the government forces, including the army, including the Nigerian peacekeepers who were sent as part of ECOMOG. There were no sides, I think, that had their hands clean in this conflict. The RUF is more reviled than the others because it launched the war, I think, and just had more international notoriety because of its size and the scope
of crimes. And those amputations. What was the justification for them?
I mean, I don't think there's a justification for crimes of that nature. I think that was actually the trademark crime, not entirely of the RUF, but really of the Army guys. My client in particular was accused of these crimes, who led the AFRC, the army that was fighting to support the government and then allied itself with the rebels and overthrew the government. And the message that they were trying to send apparently was, if you vote for the government, if you support the government, we'll chop off your hand to prevent you from voting.
So you were a lawyer. How did you wind up filming this? I'm assuming that the fact that you knew everybody gave you access that somebody else might not have had.
Right. So I should clarify, I'm actually not a lawyer. I never took the bar exam, much to my grandmother's dismay. But I did go to law school, and I had worked at the special court. So I had actually, my career's taken a bunch of jumps. I had first worked in film and then gone to law school and worked in criminal defense here in New York at the Bronx Defenders. I spent a summer doing investigative work. And then I went to West Africa and landed at the special court. And had the opportunity to know people both in the prosecution and defense and see their incredible commitment to their causes enough to be fascinated by the disparity in how they saw the world and how they saw the war to want to represent that in a film.
Well, you're showing two sides. You're showing this trial, and at the same time you're showing the attempts by everyday citizens to just put their lives together. And sometimes the two are at cross purposes.
Right.
The special court for Sierra Leone was called a hybrid court. What does that mean?
Right. So basically, international criminal justice was born at Nuremberg after World War II and then was dormant for the Cold War. So it wasn't until the 90s with the international criminal tribunals for Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia that international criminal justice resurrected itself. Those were ad hoc tribunals created by the United Nations to respond specifically to those conflicts. The special court for Sierra Leone was also an ad hoc tribunal created only to prosecute those who bear the greatest responsibility in Sierra Leone. It was created by the UN in partnership with the government of Sierra Leone, so it had jurisdiction both over international crimes and over local crimes.
And why couldn't this just have been done through the Sierra Leonean judicial system?
It's a good question and one that many people ask.
Especially since you have to bring outsiders in, which I'm sure upset some people.
Right. The justification of the court was that there wasn't the infrastructure sufficient in Sierra Leone to have these prosecutions. Sierra Leone was, you know, devastated by the war. Many people disagree with that and think there could have been a lot more local involvement by Sierra Leoneans and that would promote reform in the Sierra Leone domestic justice system and include the voice of more Sierra Leonean lawyers.
There's a lot that's unorthodox about this trial. Weren't some of the witnesses paid?
Yes. So the special court has a witness and victims unit, which compensates both prosecution and defense witnesses for their normal expenses, medical expenses, travel to the court, right? That seems kosher. The prosecution also has a special budget that was created in the founding rules of the special court that they could pay witnesses above and beyond what was necessary to compensate them for their time, literally to buy information. It's an issue we raise in the film. I think it has the potential for grossly distorting people's incentives for testifying and the stories they tell at trial.
And the prosecutors say in the film that they were dancing with the devil when they had to decide whom to prosecute and whom to use as witnesses.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, so this court had a limited mandate. Unlike the tribunals for Rwanda and Yugoslavia, it only prosecuted 10 people, so very few people. So whereas in the other tribunals, insider witnesses, those who themselves were complicit in the crimes but could testify to the structure of the rebel organizations, in other tribunals, those people, you know, could plea bargain or reduce their sentences. Here, these witnesses were basically offered de facto immunity from prosecution and paid large sums of money. So it really was a pretty critical issue at the court.
And wasn't Cisse being accused of committing crimes that actually were perpetrated by people who didn't answer directly to him?
Right. So that's a huge issue that the film raises and in international criminal justice in general are these sort of diffuse, indirect theories of criminal liability, this thing called joint criminal enterprise, where Cisse and others are convicted for crimes they may have known nothing about in regions of the country where they had no control, but because they were part of an organization that planned the territorial control takeover of Sierra Leone and there were crimes reasonably foreseeable, they were then convicted for those crimes. Even though they may have had nothing to do with that,
but we might argue the same thing if we're trying a mafia the head of a mafia family, sure. even though he may not have said to somebody, go out and break this guy's legs. It was all part of his criminal enterprise.
Right. So this is a way of convicting people, I think, when it's very hard to get evidence against them. The problem with that is there's really no way to defend against it in some sense, right? If Cisse is then liable for all the crimes committed in the war, then what's the purpose of having a trial? How could you possibly defend it? And, you know, I don't the film doesn't claim that Issa Cisse is innocent. I think his hands are dirty in some of the very most terrible crimes imaginable. And I think the prosecution had evidence against him for those. But to convict him for crimes that he was so far removed from, that seems to me to be a serious question about a miscarriage of justice.
Well, what's the difference if you get life imprisonment for the crimes you were responsible for, and we throw in a couple that you weren't necessarily? My guess is Rebecca Richmond Cohn, who is the director and producer of a film called War Done Done, which is being shown as part of the Human Rights Watch Festival. In fact, it'll be shown tomorrow evening. He was convicted. Were people following the trial in Sierra Leone?
So Sierra Leone had a vigorous outreach campaign, the special court did, where they would screen excerpts, make videotapes, and go to rural communities with power generators and televisions and screen the trial. I mean, people had other concerns besides the special court, you know, their daily bread, finding work, things like this. But by and large, I think people didn't pay a ton of attention, but the special court did, I think, do an admirable job of outreach.
Well, didn't some people oppose the court, even if they believed that Cisse should have been punished?
Absolutely. People had lots of reasons for opposing and supporting the court. The court was controversial because it prosecuted the militias that defended the government. Lots of people saw them as the good guys. Lots of people credited the court for this. Lots of people criticized the court for this. Lots of people looked critically on the court that spend over $200 million in the third poorest country in the world, when people thought that money should have gone elsewhere. I personally don't think that money would have ever gone elsewhere if it hadn't gone to the special court. I think it likely would not have gone to Sierra Leone.
There's also the matter of opening up wounds. There's always a problem in this kind of situation. You do want the perpetrators to be punished. At the same time, when people are trying to put their lives together, they don't want to have to think about all of the horrible things that they experienced in the past.
Right. I think
international... Was there a revenge feeling at all?
I mean, one of the remarkable things about Sierra Leone is that there largely really wasn't a feeling of vengeance, of revenge. None of the witnesses were threatened or hurt. There is a very strong culture of forgiveness in Sierra Leone, right? In Krio, the native language, there actually isn't a word for reconciliation. The word is forgiveness, and I think Sierra Leoneans think of themselves as a very forgiving culture.
Creole being a version of English?
It's a different language.
War done, done.
Right. The war is done. The war is over. It's a different language. It's not a dialect, but it does. Sierra Leone was founded by returned slaves from the New World who went back to Africa and imported a lot of English words.
And Liberia, its neighbor, and also connected to this whole thing, again, returned slaves,
right.
and had a similar kind of a terrible civil war. What do you think is going on there?
Right. Well, right now, the former president of Liberia, Charles Taylor, is being prosecuted. Unfortunately, he is only being prosecuted for crimes committed in Sierra Leone. There's really no political will or a very slowly emerging political will to prosecute war crimes in Liberia. So again, you have another situation where, I mean, a case against crimes committed by Charles Taylor in Liberia would be open and shut. But to prosecute him for the crimes he committed in Sierra Leone is a much harder case. And again, the prosecution relies on these very diffuse theories of criminal liability, which are hard to defend against.
What happens to Cisse? Is he going to be executed or kept in jail for the rest of his life?
Right. Well, I think maybe people should see the film to find the answer.
Have you been back?
I just returned from 2 weeks screening the film and launching our outreach campaign. The film was well received, and there was very interesting dialogue and discussions. One of the very interesting things was people laughed a lot at the screenings, which, you know, we've done a number of screenings in Europe and the United States. And
there's nothing funny in this story.
Yeah, there aren't. There are a few moments, but not many. But I was fascinated. I think it was a way that Sierra Leoneans engaged. I think there are actually some funny things in the film. But I think in some ways laughter is a human response to witnessing a very terrible thing. And yeah.
But is the situation in Sierra Leone ever going to improve? After all, it is rich in a number of natural resources, and yet we're talking about a country where pretty much everybody is extremely poor.
Right. I don't think people are worried that Sierra Leone is going to erupt in conflict anytime in the very near future. But I think people are worried in the future. The root causes of the conflict, disenfranchisement, vast and dire poverty, lack of access to education, to medical care, lack of participation in the political system, these are root causes that are not being addressed. And in some ways, I think the fear is that these international criminal prosecutions actually obscure the root causes of the conflict, that by putting the blame on a few people, by saying this was a war fought by a very few people who had no soul, who were evil human beings, that makes it very difficult to address the root causes of the crimes and respond to them.
One of the shocking things to me is that the rest of the world still seems to be relatively unaware of what happened in Sierra Leone or what's happened in the special courts.
Right. I mean, I think generally there's not much interest in the West about what happens in Africa. I think you can attribute that to a lot of things, racism included. I think it's sad that we pay very little attention to what goes on in Africa.
Rebecca Richmond Cohn is the director and producer of War Done Done, being shown as part of the Human Rights Watch Festival. Thank you so much for being
with us. Thanks, Leonard. And we'll be broadcast on HBO this fall. Thanks so much for having me.